ghost towns. They can be found all over the world, from Africa to Asia to North and South America, even Antarctica. Ghost towns are often created by a failed economy or natural and human-caused disasters. But sometimes, a ghost town is created by unexplained phenomena. There is a certain fascination about ghost towns. Perhaps it's the fact these towns are frozen in time, or maybe it's the stories they contain. Consider the following. A small, sleepy town surrounded by a large forest that hasn't changed much since the Middle Ages. A serene and calm place. You go about your daily activities, going to work, interacting with people, and having a few drinks with friends at the end of the day to vent about work and life. Then you go home and go to bed. It's 2 in the morning, and something wakes you up. At first, you're not sure what's going on, but as your eyes open and begin to focus, you see a tall and lanky man standing on the side of your bed, his back bent over and his face, a pale complexion hidden in shadow, except for his large white eyes and crooked smile, staring at you inches from your face. You try to scream, but only a muffled sound comes out of your mouth. Then you try to move, but find you can't. The lanky man just stares at you, slowly tilting his head from side to side, his crooked smile growing wider. You can do nothing but stare in horror as he takes his long, bony fingers and places them on your face. When morning comes, you wake up and feel grateful that the nightmare has ended. But when you look down at your pillow, you notice dried drops of blood. You rush over to the bathroom mirror and notice tiny marks on your face where the tall man placed his fingers. Afraid, you tell your friends about your nightmare and find that you're not the only one this has happened to. Soon, the whole town is visited by this entity every night. And those who don't experience the tall man are visited by large humanoid creatures that tap on their windows throughout the night. This was the case for many residents of a German town, and after endless nights of terror, the townspeople of this sleepy town packed their things and abandoned their home. I'm Agent Kai, and I've decided to make my reports for Lyos in the form of a podcast. My hope is that you, dear listener, we'll discover the truth of this world and open your eyes to it. 3 hours had passed since I left Frankfurt for Hildegard. There weren't many cars on the L560, especially when I hopped onto the B36. The sun was already beginning to set, and the lights of the Audi RS Q8 I was driving turned on. The Heimdall, a large engine-sized machine, weighed down the SUV. But the RSQ8's 600 horsepower was strong enough to haul it without sacrificing too much speed. I glanced at the time on the vehicle's infotainment, 16:10. I floored it, hoping I wasn't too late, but fearing the lives of those people were already spent. Prior to my arrival in Frankfurt, I had spent the last 2 weeks in the Maldives, specifically at the South Ari Atoll Resort, resting. Cameron had decided that I needed to spend some time under warm sun and bathing in aquamarine waters after my previous assignments. So suffice to say, I was well rested, and I was going to need it now that I was once again out in the cold. And it was a cold night when I overheard Carl Ludwig speaking about Hildegard. I was in a bar called Marmion, having myself a glass of André Clouet, when the man finished his tale about his hometown and how it was taken over by monsters. Ich sage dir, ich konnte nicht schlafen. Das verdammte Ding klopfte immer wieder an mein Fenster. Those who were listening to his story all rolled their eyes and asked him how many drinks he had ingested. That talking about monsters knocking on his house's windows was ridiculous.
Nein, ich meine es ernst, Carl snarled. Mention us Hildegard Verschwinden. Ich brauche Hilfe.
Carl was only met with laughter. No one seemed to care about the fact that people from Hildegard were disappearing, and that Carl was afraid he and his family might be next. According to a Lyle's intelligencer that was posted as a psychologist in Frankfurt, she had come across several patients, all from the town of Hildegard, who shared the same nightmare of a tall, lanky man they named the Schlagsigmar. Carl Ludwig was among the patients who claimed that his wife, Christine, was visited by this creature during several nights. And on the night that his wife was left alone by the Schlagsigmar, their home was tormented by large humanoid creatures with long arms and fingers that tapped on the house's windows throughout the night. Worried, this intelligencer contacted HQ and informed them that there was a possible DS incident. And seeing as how my R&R was up, Cameron dispatched me to Germany. I finished my champagne and said, "Ich glaube in deine Geschichte. Sprichst du Englisch?" Carl nodded. "Ja." "And you are?" "The name's Todd Clifton," I said. "I'm a rancher from the States." "You ever heard of the Sherman Ranch?" Carl shook his head. "No, can't say that I have." The Sherman Ranch, dear listener, or as it is better known, Skinwalker Ranch, is an area of high paranormal activity in Utah. This ranch was once owned by Terry and Gwen Sherman, who claimed to have witnessed dire wolves, missing objects around their house, and unidentified flying objects. You see, this ranch sits on a piece of land that was cursed long ago by a Native American tribe, and if anyone tries to destroy the land in any way, they will be terrorized by the Skinwalker. Now, a Skinwalker, in general, is a witch that has the ability to take the shape of an animal and attack their targets using their chosen form. While there is much more to the story of a Skinwalker, out of respect for the Navajo people, I will stop here. But I will say that the ranch has been subject to more than just cursed lands. For instance, this ranch has been the site of a dimension scar. A dimension scar, or DS for short, is a phenomenon that occurs throughout the world every now and then. For whatever reason, rift tears in the space-time continuum form wormholes that connect one dimension to another. Yes, parallel dimensions exist. The exact cause of this is still under investigation by Lyos. However, evidence has been obtained that shows certain government organizations and shadow agencies have tampered via quantum mechanics with wormhole and dark matter technology. Whatever the case may be, what is known is that these dimension scars, when left untreated, can be dangerous to the world. Certain catastrophic events throughout history, from plagues to mythological creatures, have been the result of a dimension scar. Most unidentified aerial phenomena are the result of beings from another dimension traveling through a dimension scar, usually by accident, and trying to navigate a way back home. These beings, for the most part, don't pose a threat to humanity, at least so far. Other times, creatures like the Chupacabra or the fairy folk of Iona have made their way through these scars and wreaked havoc. Every now and then, dear listener, you'll hear about these dimension scars on the news. Usually, these incidents appear as strange sky sounds or apocalyptic sky sounds. The sky sounds, which usually sound like something mechanical, are the result of Lyle's agents using what's known as the Heimdall, an air engine that zips up a dimension scar and closes it for good. This piece of technology was manufactured in Lyle's laboratories. How does it work? I don't have the slightest idea. Kioma Musa, head technologies director, is in charge of all that. Dimension scars that have been sealed in recent years have been in Mexico, Canada, Slovakia, US, Italy, Argentina, and Brazil, and these are just to name a few. However, while the technology exists to seal these regular occurring phenomena, the danger of an undetected dimension scar is great. You see, there's no telling who or what will step out of these dimension scars. Sometimes it's beings or creatures that realize they're not in their right dimension and will return to their world on their own without ever causing a stir. But more often than not, there are those beings that realize they can have a lot of fun in this dimension and refuse to return. And because little to nothing is known about these beings, when a Lyle's agent is faced with one of them, the serious threat of death clings to that agent. A few years ago, an agent I was close to, Agent Ash, was killed during an assignment involving a dimension scar in Saskatchewan. From the report I read, Agent Ash had started the Heimdall, but before she could close the dimensions car, she was attacked by a creature dubbed the Shrigul, a 5-foot bipedal cryptid with orange eyes and coal-colored flesh. This beast uses its eldritch shriek to paralyze you. Then, while it has you frozen, it begins to peel off your flesh and eat it. The Shrigul doesn't stop until it's devoured all your flesh and you've died of critical blood loss or shock. Agent Ash did her best to fight off this beast, but in the end, she succumbed to the Shrigul's shriek. She was found by our intelligencers the next day when she failed to report during the Heimdall shutoff. Agent Ash was flayed alive, but before she died, somehow, she managed to seal the dimension scar. The fact that Shrigul's torn arm was found next to Ash's body indicated the Heimdall forced the creature back to its world. I told Carl the information related to the Sherman Ranch, minus anything pertaining to Lyles. And what did you do after that?
Well, I tried to put the events of the ranch behind me, I said, but something wouldn't let me go.
I went on to tell Carl that a friend of mine, a ranch hand, was drawn back to the ranch somehow and needed my help. But by the time I reached the ranch to help my friend, they called to inform me that they couldn't help me, that they refused to go back to that place.
Christus, Carl said.
So your friend never called you originally?
I shook my head. No. Something called me in my friend's voice, but it wasn't my friend.
What did you do when you were there?
Well, Carl received a phone call. It was his wife informing him that their daughter, Gisela, along with her boyfriend, Oscar, hadn't returned from their weekend in the country. She also informed Carl that no matter how many times she tried calling Gisela's cell phone, she didn't pick up. It just went to voicemail.
Herr Clifton, Carl said, my daughter may be in trouble. Will you help me? You're the only one who believes and understands me.
I'll do what I can.
When Carl and I arrived at his apartment, his wife, Christine, was frantic. She was pacing back and forth, cell phone in hand.
We should call the police, she said. Gisela's life is at stake.
No, I said. If your daughter is back in Hildegard, then the police can do nothing.
Christine looked at me. I noticed she had 5 small marks throughout her face and forehead.
Carl, where is dieser Mann?
Todd Clifton, Carl said. A rancher from the States. He's had experience with our situation.
Christine rubbed her head.
Why would Gisela be back in Hildegard? After what she experienced, she never go back there.
No, not willingly, I said. But something may have called her back.
Carl.
Christine placed her hand over her mouth.
What if Herr Clifton is right?
Her eyes widened.
I saw it again. The Schlag Sigmar.
The Schlag Sigmar. Can you elaborate on that? Christine shivered at the mere thought of the disturbing entity. She told me that the Schlag Sigmar was the name given to the creature by the people of Hildegard. A tall, lanky man dressed in 19th century attire, with a pale face and large white eyes that peered into your soul. He visited you in your room while you slept and placed his long bony fingers on your head, paralyzed you and drained you of your dreams. This wasn't far off from the mare of Germanic folklore, dear listener, a malicious entity that sits on people's chests while they sleep and gives them nightmares. This creature has been around for centuries. In fact, you can see a representation of this beast in the painting titled The Nightmare by Henry Fuseli. It is this same creature that many, over the span of centuries, associate with sleep paralysis, the temporary inability to move or speak. While sleep paralysis can be explained medically, the truth is, whenever a person experiences this condition, it means a mare has escaped a nightmare and entered reality. Of course, a mare cannot exist in reality for long. Therefore, once the person begins to wake from the nightmare and regains control of their body, the mare is sucked back into the dream realm. It would appear that the Schlag Sigmar was a version of this mare.
I thought it came to take me back, Christine said. But what if it was looking for Gisela?
We don't know for sure, I said. But the best thing to do right now is to keep trying her cell phone. Have you called her boyfriend?
She nodded and said Oscar wasn't picking up his cell either.
Okay. Here's what we're going to do. You're going to keep calling her and her boyfriend, see if they answer. I'm going to call a friend of mine who can help in this situation. Then tomorrow, once my friend arrives, we'll go to Hildegard and get Gisella and Oscar back if they're there. Carl shook his head. If she's back in Hildegard, then we must go now. That would be a mistake, I said. We must wait for my friend. I started for the door, stopped, and turned around. If you receive a phone call from Gisella or Oscar claiming that they're in Hildegard and need you two to go save them, call me immediately. And whatever you do, do not drive out there without me. I went back to my royal suite at the Stiegenberger Frankfurter Hof and called Cameron. I informed him of what the Ludwigs told me and the possibility of a DS incident at hand.
All right, Kai, Cameron said. I'll have the local intelligencers deliver the Heimdall to you by first light. Landless had a feeling this would be the case. Therefore, she's giving you the Audi RSQ8 to haul the Heimdall. He paused. Another dimension scar. They're occurring more frequently now. Be sure to record the entities that have emerged from the scar. And Kai, be careful. Don't let what happened to Ash befall you.
I told Cameron I'd be on my guard. To prepare myself for whatever I was walking into at Hildegard, I requested a tactical suit and coat ahead of time. Basically, a regular suit and trench coat with enough concealed pockets to carry a small arsenal of gadgets. And I was taking plenty of those, from illuminators and dream dusters to gravity grinders and fairy fire. I was geared up Kappa P. Since the Heimdall wouldn't arrive till first light, I decided it was best to get some rest before heading out. From what Mrs. Ludwig said of the Schlag Sigmar, I was going to need my sleep if I wanted an advantage over this entity. The next morning, I found the Audi RSQ8 waiting for me in the parking garage across from the hotel. Tucked into the gate of the SUV was the Heimdall. After making sure it wouldn't bounce around during transit, I turned on the vehicle and drove over to the Ludwig residence. Christine met me when I arrived at their place. She was frantic and pale. It took a moment before she could settle down and speak coherently. When she finally did, she told me that Carl had taken off to Hildegard when Gisella called his cell in the early morning hours. Carl had the phone on speaker, Christine said, and she could hear Gisella whispering and sobbing, but there was a sound in the background that was reminiscent of static. It was a mimic, I said. What does this mean? It means the voice you and your husband heard was not Gisella's. It was a mimicked copy of Gisella. What your husband spoke to was something else. I paused. Why didn't you call me?
We did, multiple times.
Christine showed me her call history. She'd called my number several times, like she said.
Carl couldn't stand it, so he left.
Why didn't you go with him? Christine shook her head.
I'm not going back there. I can never go back there. Gisella might be there, but I can't.
Christine grabbed my hands.
Please, Herr Clifton, will you help bring my daughter and husband back from that damn town?
I nodded. I'll do my best. The remote town of Hildegard was surrounded by the Black Forest, with its only neighboring town, Sheedtok, miles away to its south. When I arrived, the sun had long set and the cold had grown bitter. Only the sound of the wind echoed throughout the deserted town streets. I stopped the SUV when I reached the town center and got out. This was a good place to hold a Heimdall while I searched for the source of the dimension scar. I figured the scar had to be nearby. As I walked through the cobblestone town, I caught sight of something moving past the adjacent street up ahead. I trotted over just in time to see the shadow was a woman, Gisella. I called out her name, but didn't receive a response. The woman kept walking away from me until she was devoured by the darkness of night. When I picked up my pace, I noticed something was following me from across the street. Every time I turned to see what it was, I saw nothing. Therefore, I kept walking, using my peripheral vision to make out the best I could of the thing watching me. All I could decipher was that it was in a crouched position, swinging out its long arms and legs when it moved. Whatever this thing was, it knew how to keep itself out of full sight. I continued my walk, always keeping a slight sight of the long and lanky entity at my side, which appeared to get closer and closer with each step I took. If it hadn't been for the Astra sedan, Carl's car, appearing before me, that lanky thing would have been right beside me. The Astra was parked in front of a half-timbered house I assume was the former Ludwig residence. The front door was open. Inside, the stench of rotting food was pungent. A quick tour of the first floor revealed that the Ludwigs had gone up and ran out of Hildegard. Most people did, Carl had told me the night before. When the strange creatures began terrorizing the town, the majority of residents didn't bother to clean up or pack much before getting out of town. They were too scared to care about any of their belongings. These people grabbed their essentials and left and never turned back. Those who stayed, well, they were never heard from again. The upstairs of the old Ludwig residence revealed some disturbing truths. Frozen in a kneeling position, face locked in an everlasting expression of horror, was Carl on a dusty mattress. I approached him and checked his vitals. No pulse. He was stone dead. Whatever killed him terrified the life out of him. The Schlock Sigmar was my guess. Probably the same entity that had been following me outside in the street. This was worrisome. Somehow, the Schlock Sigmar had gained the strength, or perhaps the ability, to exist outside the dream realm. I pulled out my pocket notebook and wrote this fact down. There was nothing I could do for Carl Ludwig except save his daughter if it was possible. I made my way over to the room down the hall and found Gisela asleep in her old bed. Carefully, I approached the bed and woke her up. Gisela rubbed her eyes.
Oscar, bist du das?
I'm afraid not, I said. My name is Todd Clifton and I'm here to bring you home.
Oh my god, Gisela glanced around the room. Where am I?
Hildegard.
What? Hildegard?
Come on, we have to get out of here.
Nein, I don't know you.
Gisela, rightfully so, was hesitant to trust me. She asked me several questions about her parents and the history of Hildegard. Despite my answers being satisfactory, Gisela still didn't want to let her guard down. This was understandable. Therefore, I told her that she could come with me or she could get herself out of Hildegard. Of course, I had to warn her about the Schlock Sigmar prowling the town streets. I made it into the hall when Gisela came running out.
Okay, Herr Clifton, she said. I'll go with you for now.
We walked past the master bedroom. I had closed the door so that Gisela wouldn't catch a glimpse of her father's corpse. She didn't need to know he was dead until after we were out of this damn town. The first thing Gisela wanted to know when we were back outside was if I'd seen Oscar. I told her I hadn't. Then I asked her if she believed he was here in town.
Yes, she said. Over the past few months, Hildegard has become a sort of game. Lots of teenagers from all over Germany come to Hildegard to prove their bravery. They record themselves on TikTok, the Hildegard Challenge.
Is that why you and Oscar came here? She nodded.
We both wanted to prove that we were brave enough to walk the haunted streets.
The Schlock Sigmar didn't summon you here.
Nein. Why do you ask?
Curiosity. It appeared the Schlock Sigmar was a lucky entity. It didn't have to do much to terrorize the Ludwig family. The daughter came here out of her own volition. All the Schlock Sigmar had to do was appear in the dreams of Christine to cast the lure that reeled in Carl to his death. Gisela noticed the Astra parked in front of the house.
This is my father's car, she said. Is my father here too?
I nodded. He was.
What do you mean?
I explained to Gisela what had happened to her father, how he received a false call from the Schlock Sigmar, drove out to Hildegard, and met his untimely demise by that nightmarish entity.
Where is he?
Gisela started sobbing.
Where is he?
It's best that you don't know, I said. You shouldn't have to see your father the way he was left. Gisela placed her hands over her head.
Sackmir Forest!
He's inside your house, in his room. Gisela ran back into the house. Her lament filled the night air. After Gisela had come to terms with her father's fate later that night, through a long and difficult conversation with me, she finally stepped out of the house and pulled out her phone. She opened the TikTok app. She clicked on Oscar's profile and saw the latest uploaded video. It displayed Oscar running away from the Ludwig house, cursing nonstop. He ran back to his house where his phone fell to the ground. Before the video ends, A shadow is seen hovering over the phone. Oscar, Gisella looked at me.
No, I will not allow this forsaken town to take another man in my life. Do you have any idea where Oscar may be?
He's got to be at his old house.
Oscar's house was located on the east side of town. Gisella had tried contacting him multiple times, but found that every time she tried to call or text, the phone signal dropped. She could browse social media apps, even the internet, but she couldn't reach out to anyone in any way. Once inside, we did a quick sweep of the first floor with no luck. Then we started for the upstairs. When we reached Oscar's bedroom, I told Gisella to brace herself for the worst. But nothing can brace a person for the unexpected death of a loved one. I had to watch as Gisella broke down for the second time that night. Her boyfriend, Oscar, had fallen victim to the Schlagsigmar. His eyes were wide, his face a twisted contortion of horror. As I held Gisella in my arms while she wept, a tapping came from the windows. I told Gisella to wait for me by the door while I investigated the sound. Slowly, I walked over toward the window and peered out. The first thing I noticed was the shimmering sphere of light coming from the sky. It was the size of a kitchen plate, a dimension scar. Below it, sitting on the street, was a large, pudgy yellow creature with a big head, wiggling horns, and long arms. The thing was reminiscent of a tube man used for dealerships. When it saw me staring out the window, the creature let out a loud, strange howl. It continued its howl while tapping ferociously at the window with its long fingers.
"The Baobakta," Gisella said, covering her ears.
"They're trapped in here for the rest of the night."
"What do you mean?" I said.
"Thing always appeared during the night at our house. It would tap on the windows all night, and when we peered outside, it would let out a freaky cry."
"Well, we don't have all night," I said, taking out a fairy fire round. "Let's see if this works."
The fairy fire round resembled a small sprite the size of a tennis ball. I activated it. Immediately, it began glowing a bluish white and hovering in the air.
"The Baobakta is your target."
The fairy spun around the room once and shot out the window faster than a bullet. I watched as the fairy dived into the Baobakta with an explosion of light. The ear-splitting howl of the entity ceased. It was frozen solid. Then, within seconds, the frozen entity began to melt before exploding into a white-hot flame that turned the bizarre creature into mulch.
"My God," Gisella said.
"What was that?"
"No time to explain," I said. "We have to go now."
It appeared as if the dimension scar was reaching its active portion. If I didn't grab the Heimdall and shut this scar down now, there was no telling how many more creatures would step out of that scar. Outside, we started for the RSQ-8 when the Schlagsigmar appeared across the street. Once again, it managed to keep itself just out of sight. Luckily, Gisella didn't seem to notice the entity following us. When we got to the SUV, I unloaded the Heimdall and told Gisella to get inside and wait for me. I also told her that if I hadn't returned in 20 minutes, to jump in the driver's seat and drive out of here. To make sure she didn't just drive away before the 20 minutes, I programmed the SUV via my key fob to wait the 20 minutes before allowing a driver to operate it. I made my way back to the front of Oscar's house. The shimmering sphere of light was still hovering several feet in the sky. It was beginning to form a spiral, which meant the dimension scar was opening up again. I dragged the Heimdall and placed it underneath the shimmering sphere. Immediately, the air engine began glowing a bright orange. The indicator the engine was ready to seal up the scar. I thumbed down the on button. Within seconds, the Heimdall unleashed its infamous machine-like sound that echoed in the night air. Then, a whirlwind roared out of the engine and started to devour the shimmering sphere above it. As I took a few steps back to allow the Heimdall to work, I was struck by a powerful blow that shot me against Oscar's house. The blow had knocked the wind out of me for a couple of minutes. When I was able to regain my breath, I saw the Schlagsigmar in all its disturbing entirety. The creature was tall, well over 7 feet, and lanky. Its arms and legs stretched out well beyond its body. In truth, the Schlagsigmar reminded me of Jack Skellington. Except, instead of a skull for a face, this creature had the visage of a pale old man with large white eyes and dark pupils.
When I stood up, the Schlock-Sigmar stopped its examination of the Heimdall and turned toward me. Those large white eyes with their probing pupils stared at me for a brief moment before it unleashed its roar and shot its lanky arms at me. I jumped out of the way while simultaneously throwing a gravity grinder at the entity. The device exploded near the creature, trapping it in its hit range. Instead of being stretched to its breaking point and then pulverized within a nanosecond, the Schlock-Sigmar reached safe ground and came after me. I tried to run, but the creature was too fast. Instead, it pinned me down with its large hand and began applying pressure. It was upon me in the blink of an eye. The Schlock-Sigmar stared at me with its large, bulging eyes. While keeping me down with its one hand, it placed the other over my head. Almost instantly, I began feeling a tension headache on my temples. I wasn't sure what this creature was doing, but I had a feeling it was trying to make my head explode. Of course, I don't know if this was the case, but I didn't want to find out. Therefore, I pulled out a fairy fire and rolled it on the floor. The Schlock-Sigmar is your target. The fairy went straight to work. It shot itself deep into the lanky beast, freezing it within seconds. It took me a few tries, but using the one-inch punch, I managed to break the Schlock-Sigmar's arm and hand. This brought instant relief to my head. For the next minute, I laid on the ground catching my breath. But this didn't last long when I heard the sound of cracking ice. The Schlock-Sigmar was breaking free of the fairy fire. This creature was strong if it was able to survive the fairy fire, I thought. Reflexively, I pulled out another gravity grinder and shoved it into the frozen creature's mouth. Then, I kicked the beast to the side and started running. The gravity grinder activated the instant the Schlock-Sigmar broke free of its icy prison. It didn't take long for the creature to realize what it had in its mouth, but it was too late. The device exploded. Bones cracked. Flesh tore off. The Schlock-Sigmar was stretched for miles into the sky. While the beast was being racked, the Heimdall was growing louder. The engine shot out a roaring whirlwind at the shimmering sphere above it. This caused the dimension scar to close. As it did, anything that had stepped out of it was sucked back into it. The Schlock-Sigmar had been crushed by the gravity grinder before being pulled back into the dimension scar. Once the scar had been sealed, the Heimdall ceased its whirlwind and shut down. I dropped to the floor and took several deep breaths. Those dimension scars are always pandemonium. I jumped up and turned around the instant I heard that voice. Standing before me was a ghost from my past. Agent Ash, I said. It can't be. But it is, she said. I have come back. I wanted to believe more than anything that she had come back from the dead. Truth be told, I missed her. But I knew that whatever was standing in front of me was something else. Although, I had to admit, the illusion was immaculate. The flowing brown hair, those sweet brown eyes, her caring smile, and even her tanned complexion. If I didn't know any better, I'd say I was looking at the real Ash. However, that was impossible. No, what I was looking at was a Deamorph. A Deamorph, dear listener, is a demonic creature that lurks deep in forests around the world. This being has no real shape or form. Instead, it reads its victim's mind and finds a loved one that means something to them and morphs into that person. Then, it approaches the victim and waits for them to lower their guard. Once this happens, the Deamorph begins to drain the victim of their life force either through an embrace, kiss, or intercourse. The Deamorph is responsible for hundreds of missing hikers and campers around the world. Ash was a top-rated Lyos agent, I said. Who died years ago. I know, I did die, she said, but my soul was transferred over to another dimension where I was born anew. I came out of the dimension scar here. I knew that if I waited around, Lyos would send an agent to shut it down. I was hoping it would be you. I shook my head. It's not you, Ash. I wish it was. She walked up to me and placed her hand on my face. You've been through so much since I last saw you, she said. How have you been holding up? Who do you speak to nowadays? And who do you spend the holidays with? The remnant memories of Agent Ash were strong in this Deamorph. It was impressive how this creature could use those old memories of the form it took and act out and sound like the real person. She smiled. Do you remember? The Deomorph froze for a moment. It placed its hand over its face. Then they looked up at me, as if seeing me for the first time. Kai? Is that you? The look in the Deomorph's eyes changed. Before, there was a blank look to those sweet browns, but now they had life in them. Either this was a powerful Deomorph, or Ash's remnant memories had somehow taken over the creature. Ash? Ash threw her arms around me. I wrapped my arms around her and held her tight. I'm not really here, am I? She said. I'm something else. I nodded. A Deomorph. Then you need to get out of here. You know how these damn creatures work. The longer and closer you stay to it, the more real I become, and the more of a danger that becomes to you. Yes, a diabolical being for sure. Ash examined me through watery eyes. Look at you, Kai, she said. You look like a spent swimmer. This job is killing you. I'm sure this job will kill me one day, I said. That possibility comes with the job. You know that better than anyone. Yeah, I do. Ash chuckled. But I don't want that fate for you. The sound of footsteps echoed throughout the night. Who's that? Ash said. I glanced over my shoulder and saw once more the silhouette of the gentleman unknown. He stood still and watched us for a moment from a pocket of darkness. Despite my best efforts, I still couldn't make out his face. There was nothing but shadow covering it. He made a movement of his arm and opened his trench coat to reveal a 3-foot figure clutching onto his leg. That's the gentleman unknown that's been stalking me, I said. The 3-foot figure let go of the shadowed entity and began walking toward us. When it was within visible distance, we noticed what this beast was. A Shrigul, Ash said. How can that be? Another dimension scar somewhere, I said. Then I turned to the gentleman unknown. Are you the one behind the recent activity occurring worldwide? Gentleman unknown closed his trench coat and said nothing. Kai, are you here alone? No, I have a girl with me. Then get her out of here, Ash said. I'll stop this beast. What? One of these damn things killed me already. Damn thing can't do it again. I took out my last remaining fairy and handed it to Ash. Here, use this on it. Ash looked at me and smiled. Don't die, Agent Kai. This world needs you. Ash! Ash ran up to the young Shrigul, unleashed the fairy fire on it, and trapped the beast in a bear hug. The fire engulfed the other dimensional entity and consumed it in ice before beginning to melt and burn it out of existence. While Ash did this, I slipped out my last gravity grinder. Carefully, I threw it as fast as I could at the gentleman unknown, but he saw it coming. He then hovered several feet up in the air and threw something onto the ground. It was a phial containing red liquid that erupted into a consuming fire the instant it was released from its container. The fire spread rapidly. Within seconds, it was upon Ash and the remains of the young Shrigul. The flames licked and tore away Ash's flesh. She stared at me through the fire, not making a sound, only smiling at me. Fire, dear listener, is the only thing that can destroy a Deomorph. I smiled back and then ran to the RSQ-8 as fast as I could. Gisella was still on the passenger side doing her best to figure out how to reach help via her phone. I got into the SUV. Holy shit, you're alive. What happened back there? She said. I heard a million weird noises. Is that fire? There's no time, I said, putting the vehicle in gear. Let's get the hell out of here. I floored the RSQ-8 and flew out of Hildegard, just as the sun's first rays stretched across the morning sky and a raging fire devoured the ghost town. In the weeks that followed, reports of strange mechanical noises being heard in the sky by residents of Hildegard's neighboring towns came out. If any curious people decided to venture out to Hildegard, they would find nothing but an abandoned town. The fire that had consumed the town had indeed scorched the place. However, Lyle's intelligencers set up a holographic simulacrum that displayed Hildegard the way it was. Carl Ludwig's body was burned to ash during the fire, as was Oscar's. Therefore, the memory altering unit, the MAU, staged a car accident on the road leading into Hildegard. Police reports here stated that an inebriated Oscar was driving out of Hildegard in a rush and collided head-on with Carl's car. The crash knocked out both drivers when a fire consumed them and their cars. Gisela Ludwig was reunited with her mother, Christine. The MAU altered Gisela's memory of the deaths of her father and boyfriend to match the car accident. However, according to the same intelligencer who reported the DS incident, Gisela, becoming a new patient of theirs, always reported having the same nightmare of seeing her father and boyfriend frozen in lifeless horror. Whenever she had this nightmare, which is often, she wakes up crying and screaming. She's aware it's only a nightmare, but she cannot shake off the profound sadness that lingers in her heart. Both Gisela and Christine shared concerns of knowing the name Todd Clifton, but having a difficult time recalling where they had heard that name. The intelligencer responded that they had mentioned the name weeks ago when they had been asked by Gisela and Christine what the book she was reading, Invisible Man, was about. The Heimdall was successful in sealing off the dimension scar in Hildegard. All of the entities that had stepped out of it were vacuumed up by the engine and thrown back into their proper dimensions. The Schlacksigmar and the Baalbachter now only lived in the nightmarish memory of those who had encountered it in the past. The Deamorph that had taken the form of Agent Ash was obliterated by the raging inferno along with the Shri'Gul. Once again, no traces of the Gentleman Unknown were found. This agent filed a report to Patrice Landless, stating that the Gentleman Unknown had somehow gained access to a Shri'Gul, an entity that does not exist in our dimension, and sicked it on this agent. In addition, this agent stated that it was the Gentleman Unknown that also brought the Deamorph to Hildegard. The town was not deep enough into the Black Forest for the creature to wander in on its own. If not for Agent Ash's remnant memories possessing the Deamorph, this agent may have suffered the same fate as her. This agent is waiting to see if this information expedites the permission to investigate the Gentleman Unknown. The loss of a loved one is something one must endure at some point in life. It is a chaotic and confusing time. The realization that the person one loves is no longer with them is surreal. C.S. Lewis once wrote, "For in grief nothing stays put. One keeps on emerging from a phase, but it always recurs. Round and round, everything repeats. And everything does repeat. With each thought of that loved one, the grieving process hits one anew. The twisting pain of the heart, the disbelief, and the unbearable truth that they're gone. But it comes like waves after a storm, a tsunami at first, but over time, gentle and soothing." Gisela Ludwig experienced the loss of her father and boyfriend, Christine Ludwig the loss of her husband, and despite their terrifying encounter with the Schlacksigmar, nothing will haunt or hurt these two women more than the loss of their loved ones. The real terror here is the fact that none of them will ever get to see or speak to Carl again. At least not on this earthly plane. For this agent, seeing Ash, or rather a representation of Ash, was hurtful beyond belief. She and this agent had been close in life, and while every fiber of this agent's being wanted the Deamorph to be the real Ash, this agent was struck with a profound sadness that this version of Ash was only an illusion. But it wasn't just sadness. C.S. Lewis said that grief felt like fear, that the sensation of grief is so like being afraid, the same fluttering of the stomach, the same restlessness, the yawning, the fear of never seeing that friendly face, those warm brown eyes, or that bright smile. But that fear is just profound grief. It takes a toll over time. One becomes restless, then exhausted from carrying the weight of grief. It is only time that can lift that weight, only time that can turn sadness into comfort. While it has been a few years since Ash departed this world, this agent has made peace with this fact, and now takes comfort in those shared memories. In this harsh and unforgiving world, losing a loved one is a difficult lesson to learn. But it is a lesson meant to strengthen the character of an individual and highlight the beauty of a moment. And if one accepts death as a natural occurrence, while always hard to endure, there is a peace and comfort that comes with knowing that those loved ones never die, but rather live on in the hearts and memories of those who cared for them.